also in this, I've read a few things about the grapefruit story about, and you know, I'm watching your documentary and I'm seeing how I'm like, it's like, oh my God, high definition. He's shoving that grapefruit into poor Mae Clark's face.
Yeah. And- well, see, my father's story on that was, see, he was married at the time to an aviatrix, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. And, they were having marital problems. And one morning, my father used to like to have a half a grapefruit as part of his breakfast. And they were going through a thing at the time, he and his wife, where they weren't speaking. She wouldn't speak to him. So, and he thought to himself, I think I'd like to take this grapefruit and just shove it right in her face. You know, but he didn't do it.
Right.
Now, he goes to the studio. Now he's shooting, you know, he's shooting Public Enemy. And when that scene comes up, he thought, I'm going to do it in the movie. Now, it's not written that. What's written in the script is that the Cagney character picks up the grapefruit and throws it at the Mae Clark character. That's the way it's written by the writers. And my father went to Cagney and didn't tell Mae Clark. Went to Cagney and said, I want you to squeeze that grapefruit right in her face. So she's so shocked, and you can see it.
Oh, you can.
Oh, you know it. And so, and that's the way it was.
I read that she thought it wasn't going to show up in the film. She was demoralized, and your father said, you know, I don't like that dame anyway. I don't know if that's true, but I love that story.
I'm not sure. I don't know that.
Yes,
story.
But
I'm not
that's,
saying it's not true, but I don't know that.
But she was.
I do know
that.
I do know the grapefruit. I have my father's script. I have the Public Enemy shooting script, and I know exactly what's written. And then he writes in pencil, "Have Cagney shove grapefruit in Clark's face." He writes that.
And boy, did he!
Yeah.
I read that women's groups got upset about that. I wonder if that's true.
Maybe. You know, well, what are we talking? What year are we talking about? 30, what is it?
32.
19? See, that
actually,
the code,
31,
we didn't
I'm
have
sorry.
The, we didn't have the code. So people, you know, the filmmakers could pretty much do what they wanted. The code didn't come in until 34.
Right. And he did some wonderful films. Midnight Mary, that was with Loretta.
I can't believe you said that. I was just thinking in my mind, I think I'll ask Grace about Midnight Mary if she's seen it. Now, Midnight Mary, I showed Midnight Mary down at the University of California, Riverside. Mm-hmm. They have a theater. It's actually in Palm Desert. And I showed Midnight Mary there. And the thing about it is, it's not only a wonderful film, but it's got everything in it for that the code got upset about. Everything that you can think of, from bad language to, you know, hitting women to, you know, everything you can think of that the code got angry about is in that film.
I love that film.
But it's, I think it's a wonderful film.
It really is. It's her, Franco Tone, Una Merkel, and of course, Ricardo Cortez, whose real name is, I think, Jacob Kravitz or something. He's from the Lower East Side. But
Loretta
I love
Young.
Him.
So isn't she beautiful in that film?
Oh, my God. She was so lovely in her earlier films, boy.
You know, apropos of our stories of people who were not happy with me because they'd had a problem with my father, I was at the opening of the Palm Springs Air Museum. Mm-hmm. And I think it was 1998, if I'm not mistaken. I think that's the year. And because of Buddy Rogers and Wings, and I had done the documentary with Buddy Rogers, and he had passed away, but his wife invited me to the opening of the Palm Springs Air Museum. And they had it was a gala. And I'll shorten the story, but when it came time to have the dinner portion, we went into one of the two huge hangars that they had set up for a beautiful dinner party. And in walks Loretta Young. And I'm there with my wife, And I said to her, oh, my God, there's Loretta Young. Now, I tried to get Loretta Young to do my documentary. I never spoke with her, but word came back to me that she had said, I don't do on camera anymore. Not at all. So, okay, she comes into the room, and I knew she was one of my father's favorites. And she looked so gorgeous.
She always looked beautiful.
Yes. And I said to my wife, you know, I'm going to go over there and introduce myself. Maybe she's going to slap me. I don't know. But I have to do this. So I walked over. She was seated at this point. I walked over to her, and she looked up at me, and I said, Miss Young, I just wanted to tell you that I'm a big fan of yours, and I'm Bill Wellman Jr. And I kind of was stumbling through this, and I kind of put my hand out like I was going to shake her hand, which is kind of stupid. But she grabbed my hand and pulled me down next to her and proceeded to tell me how much she loved my father. Excuse me. It breaks me up a bit. How much she loved my father, and working for him was so great. And, oh, my God, and we chatted on for quite a long time. I said, Loretta, why didn't you do the documentary? You look so beautiful. She said, no, I don't do on camera anymore, not even for your father. But I loved him. So
that was a good experience for you. Yes. It was certainly no Mean Boys. So I want to get to a couple. Heroes for Sale. That was a pretty heavy-duty film he did about a war veteran coming home. He was actually a hero, but he had been caught. Nobody knew. They thought he was dead. And he worked at a bank, and the banker's son took credit for being this hero. And what's his name? Richard Dix?
Yes. No, not Richard Dix.
The other guy, I can think of his name. I know. I'm going to find it right.
Grant Withers. Wasn't that Grant Withers?
Let me look. I don't. Heroes for Sale. I think Grant Withers could have been. It was Richard Bartholomew.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
And Loretta was in that one as well. And that was pretty hard hitting. It was a depression.
Oh, my God. It was everything happens to that poor guy.
Oh, my. I don't know how he didn't just, you know, put himself in a dryer and dry himself.
I know. That's a rough movie.
It really is.
I mean, they said they thought he was a communist. I mean, everything you can think of happened to that guy.
And he had done absolutely nothing. And we're not going to give away everything. You know, he falls in. Loretta's in this as well. And it's just holy heartbreak. That's all I can tell you.
But yeah, that's one of the wonderful films that my father made in the 30s. And, of course, Wild Boys of the Road.
I was just going to talk about that.
Okay,
so why don't you tell us
one
about your dad and your mom meeting? How did they meet?
Okay, they met at the studio, at Warner Brothers Studio. My mother, who was a Busby Berkeley dancer, she mm-hmm. was a and had danced in many of the wonderful musicals, starting in 1929 with a musical called Show of Shows. She did many musicals, and she was doing Gold Diggers of 33. At the studio, and my father was preparing Heroes for Sale. And all he did was the cooling off period with his wife, where they had divorced, but you couldn't get the actual legal divorce for
a
year.
Yeah, the decree, the whole nine yards.
The decree and all that. Mm-hmm. So he was in that period, so he couldn't get married right away to anybody. And he just walked over there and saw some of the Busby Berkeley dancing girls just kind of sunning themselves sitting outside the soundstage during like a lunch break. And he saw my mother, and it really got him. So he went on the set and went up to Busby Berkeley and said, and Berkeley looked at him and said, oh, you too, you want to come over and meet one of my girls like the rest of the guys are doing. And my dad said, well, you know, I've tried to stay away from that. He says, but there is one gal I kind of would like to meet. And he told Berkeley who it was, and Berkeley said, well, no, she's just a nice girl. You don't want to mess around with her. My father said, well, you know, I'd like to meet her. So that's where they met, and they started seeing each other. And eventually, they got married, at first secretly, because the year's decree was not up. But when they could, then they actually got the marriage performed. They flew to Las Vegas and were married there and lived happily ever after for 42 years for the rest of my father's life.
Well, on your documentary, but you know what? He was older. There was like a 20 years age difference.
He was 37 and my mother's 18.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. And so he was ready. And for her, wasn't she sort of dancing and supporting her mom and her family?
Yeah.
She quit school. So she
was. They had gone through the depression. Yeah. And her mother, her father had left the mother, just walked out. And can you believe this? Lived in the neighborhood with his girlfriend.
Ugh.
So the kids knew that the father lived, you know, a few streets away. How terrible. I can't even get over that. But
it
was the depression, and they all had, the kids had to find some way of making a living, you know, delivering newspapers. My mother's mother took in sewing, you know, and laundry, and mother, you know, who loved dancing, and she started taking the red line into the studios to try to get a job as a dancer, and she did. She got one.
So she was supporting her family.
Yeah, she was making the most money of anybody in the family.
And so she certainly was not your average 18-year-old. She had been, not that she had been around men, but she knew the score as far as life in certain ways, about money, about what was going on. What I find really interesting is that he cast her in another one of his wonderful films, I just watched this the other day again, Wild Boys on the Road.
Yeah, Wild Boys of the Road, yep. The studio, now my father was under contract to Warner's, and he pretty much had to follow their orders. You know, he was this was the full contract player where you had to make whatever script they gave you, you had to make it without objection. And that was, you know, my father got that story and wanted to make it, but they wanted to have if you remember the actress Arlene Judge.
Yes.
There were several, I think Ann Sheridan, if I'm not mistaken, there were a couple of very attractive women that the studio wanted to play the leading lady in the movie. Now, the leading lady in the movie is dressed like a boy, masquerading as a boy for most of the movie. And my father didn't think these attractive women would be proper. He wanted somebody who could, you know. And so here was my mother, who had never been an actress. She'd been a dancer. But she had freckles and, you know, and he thought, she's perfect. So he talked her into doing it and just told the studio, this is who I'm using. So, you know, just leave me alone. So the studio, of course, wanted to put my mother under contract after the movie was completed. But she was ready to get married, and she didn't care about having a career anymore. She wanted to be my father's wife, and she wanted to be a mother to kids. And, you know, that's what they wanted.
And that's what they had. And she did a really good job in that movie, I thought.
She did.
I thought she was great. A couple movies I want to talk about. This one is just, at the time, I know it didn't do well, but I think now it's like 4 stars and people really think it's an unbelievable film. The Oxbow Incident.
Yeah.
I watched that once and I cried my eyes out. I can never watch it again. But in your documentary, it showed clips of it. And I thought Dana Andrews was amazing in this film.
Yes.
He didn't have a large part, but it was so pivotal. And I love him. He was really great in that film.
Yes, yes, he was. Well, that was probably the most difficult movie for my father to get made. of the movies that he really wanted to make.
Right.
You know, every once in a while he'd come across something and he really wanted to make it. Well, this was really tough because, first of all, we're talking about World War II.
Right.
You know, and the country, you know, we had race riots going on in the South. You know, there was internment camps in the West. I mean, this was a black period. And the studios did not want to make a movie about the hanging of innocent men, for God's sakes. So my father actually had found out about the story. It was a book first. And a producer had actually tracked my father to where he was having a vacation with my mother at the Arrowhead Hot Springs Hotel, believe it or not, in San Bernardino. And he tracked my father there and tried to talk him into taking an interest in this book called The Oxbow Incident. And my father kind of said, okay, well, I'll look at it. Well, he loved it. So he ended up, the producer who had bought the rights to the book couldn't get anyone to make the movie. And so my father bought the rights from the producer, and my father couldn't get anyone to want to make this movie. And finally, Daryl Zanuck, who had left Warner Brothers and was now at 20th Century Fox, and he went to Zanuck, and they had been on a hunting trip and had a fist fight, so they were not talking to each other. So, I mean, what chances my father got of getting this movie made at 20th Century Fox? Well, evidently, Zanuck said, okay, I'll look at it. And he read it, and he said, look, this will never make a dime, but I'd like my name on it. But you're going to have to make it really cheap, and you're going to have to do pictures for me, at least two pictures, sight unseen, whatever scripts I give you. My father was willing to do it under any condition. So the movie, and here's an outdoor Western shot in a soundstage. Can you believe that? Now, I'm 5 years old. My father takes me to the studio, and we go to 20th Century Fox, and we drive up to their big soundstage, and they roll open the doors, and we walk in, and I'm 5 years old. What do I know? And we walk in, and there is everything that I know is supposed to be outside is inside. There's trees and rocks and dirt and hills and, you know, a stream. And I'm walking around going, it really introduced me to the magic of movies.
Right.
But this is what my father had to go through in order to get this picture made. And when it was finished, now this is amazing to me. Now, it did not make any money, okay? The movie was nominated as Best Picture of the Year. No other nominations. Now, if you want to have a little research fun, you try to find another movie that's nominated as Best Picture of the Year without any other nominations.
That's very odd, you know, because
almost impossible to find it.
There are some, and especially Best Picture of the Year, and the director does not get
See, the Academy, the Academy, they look at it and they say, we can't dismiss this completely. This movie is a great movie, you know. So they put it in as one of the best pictures of the year. And it takes a long time, but it started in Europe. The reputation started to grow. And now it's on everybody's best Western list.
Well, even just a best film, not just Western, it was, you know, The Mob, the whole thing. It's just so realistic because, you know, how mob mentality goes, one person and then the whole crowd. It's just so frightening, and yet it happens, and it happens today. It happens all the time, and it just portrays that perfectly.
And one of the moments that's always picked out of that picture is near the end, the reading of the letter.
Oh my God. Sob,
now, you know,
sob,
I did commentary on Oxbow Incident on DVD. I did commentary on it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is almost, you know, see, if my father made a movie from a book, he was always after the writers to stick to the book. That was something that was so important to him. Now, with the Oxbow incident, he made a few little changes from the book. And one of the changes was, in the book, we don't get to hear the letter. We don't know the letter. And my father thought that it should be, the audience should get to hear the letter.
100%. Totally right.
You know? So he shot it in such an unusual way where Henry Morgan is leaning against the bar with Henry Fonda next to him, but Henry Morgan's hat is covering Henry Fonda's eyes, so all you get are his lips moving as he reads the letter. It's pretty fantastic.
Oh, I know. I saw that in the documentary today, that and the different shots your father took, which were really great. Okay, you are an actor. Let's talk about you for a sec. You have been, your mom didn't want you to do the first film. She's like, want him to finish
totally
college.
Against.
You were, what'd you do, 1 year?
Yeah, I'd just come home from my freshman year. I was going to Duke University taking business administration, mm-hmm. not knowing what the hell I was going to do the rest of my life, you know. And my father calls me from the studio, from Warner Brothers, and he says, hey, Bill, I'm doing this movie about, you know, the pilots that I knew and the war and, you know, and one of the main roles is me. And the head of casting and publicity thought that, you know, since you're the same age basically as I was when I went to war, that maybe you could play me. And I have no thought of being an actor, for God's sakes. And I'm going, what? And he says, well, do you want to come out and test? You'll have to test for it in front of Jack Warner and, you know, everybody at Warner's. And I thought about it, and I thought, okay. So I learn a scene, and I go out, and I have to do a test, a live test, in front of Jack Warner and the heads of all the departments and my father. And the prospective actors were all in the same room. The other actors are sitting in school chairs. And I'm testing with Tab Hunter, reading. We're standing up doing the scene together. And fortunately for me, Tab Hunter is the kind of a person that when he was nervous, it showed. My nervousness didn't show, but I had like volcanic eruptions going on inside me. So I guess I looked better than I should have. And they all passed on me. My dad called me. He says, Bill, Jack Warner passed on you. Everybody passed on you. You got the job. So all of a sudden, from out of college, I'm now an actor, and I know nothing about being an actor. This is the funny thing. Absolutely nothing. And I said to my father, well, how do I be an actor? And he says, you don't act, just be yourself. Well, my first thought was, I kind of like to be better than myself. You know, so this is how I start. I have no training. And my father just said, now, look, learn your lines, be on time, no fooling around. So that's it. And if you look at the movie, that's what you see. A guy just, you know, I'm saying my lines. I'm just kind of, I don't think I'm that good, although I did get good reviews, and I don't know exactly why. But there you go. And all of a sudden, you know, I'm an actor, and I don't have an agent. I don't know anything about acting. I started going acting classes. I went to 3 acting classes a week, and one was a comedy class, and I'm not funny. I went to a gym. I didn't like the way I looked. I thought I sounded like, hey, you want to go outside and see the airplanes? And I thought, oh, God, this is terrible. So I went to a voice
coach
teacher,
yeah,
you know, and so instead of sounding like, hey, you know, you want to go look at the horses, I'm saying, hey, you want to go look at the horse? Well, that was worse. At least the other guy was real. This
right.
guy was, you know, so I went through a whole lot of stuff, but I was not going to give it up, and I was going to do, you know, whatever I could to give myself an opportunity to have a career in this business.
And you had
and
a
I did
career.
It.
Good for you, because most people who do that do not have a career in this business. People want it. It's very rare that people can make their living as an actor. So congrats to you. I want to ask you a question because we did talk about, you mentioned this before. Do you feel that the name William Wellman Jr. hindered you or helped you or neither of the above?
Well, probably all of the above, because the thing is, there's a whole different world, you know, if I'm John Wayne Jr.
Right.
See, because a director is not going to sell tickets, really.
Right. You're correct.
So you don't get, I don't get that advantage. And the fact that my father alienated himself from a lot of people didn't exactly help.
Yeah.
So, but the point is, the bad thing maybe is that it made people aware of me too quickly. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
William Wellman Jr., what the hell is that? You know, people in the business were wondering. So, you know, they looked, you know, at my first work and, you know, and I started doing films like, you know, beach party movies and, you know, voodoo movies and, you know, whatever I could,
my
whatever
favorites.
I could get. So the point is, you know, it's tough to be good in a beach party movie.
Oh, if you can
really
dance,
tough.
Wear a nice swimming suit and kind of do the watusi.
Well, you know what I'm saying.
Yeah,
so
I know.
It's hard to have anyone think seriously about you as being
I agree.
Some kind
I
of
know
an actor.
I know what you're talking about. But you did I'm sorry, go on.
They could. I was like, you know, carpet. I was everywhere. You could not get rid of me. And I did, I thought, well, I'm going to do everything that an actor can do to give myself the opportunity. I did print modeling and I did commercials, you know, on movies, TV, plays, you know, voiceover, whatever I could do. I was out there and I had all kinds of agents and I worked hard, you know, to get work. And I've had some 500 jobs, if you count commercials and everything I did. I did 127 scripted television shows, 65 movies, you know. And so they couldn't get rid of me.
Good for you. And then add to your thing, the wonderful documentary on your dad and this wonderful book, everybody. I'm going to show you this book, and I think we'll put your documentary so that people can get that there. But the wonderful book that Bill wrote was Wild Bill Wellman, Hollywood Rebel. And it's a wonderful, wonderful, well-written book. I love it.
Thank you so much. Thank you. And also you can get the documentary. You know, it's in DVD. It's Kino. It's out there, and you can find it on Turner Classic Movies or Amazon or any of those.
It's a wonderful, wonderful documentary. I really enjoyed it. And like I said, I cried at the end. I'm a mushmallow fluff. I can't help it. I adored your mother. I adored her. And
thank you.
I loved what your father, and I adored your dad too. I thought he was great. And I loved your family. And I loved how, you know, you didn't go like really fancy schmancy. You know, if you go to a cabin, the bigger boys would be on cots. And it was just fun. I just loved your family. And I also loved how your dad loved animals so much.
He did.
Yes. I love what he did to that guy. When I read about the raccoon, that your mascot getting hit in the head and killed, and he beat up that guy and got him out of there. Good for him.
Hey, listen, if you watch my father made over 80 movies, and I'm telling you, there are dogs and animals in almost every one of them. We were talking about Oxbow Incident.
Yeah.
At the beginning of the picture, when Henry Fonda and Morgan ride into town, there's an old hound dog that crosses the street in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the movie, after the reading of the letter, and they leave town, that same old dog crosses behind them, right to left, behind them. Even in the Oxbow Incident, he found a way to get a dog in there. And there's dogs in, you know, G.I. Joe. There's a dog that's a main character. He's always putting dogs and animals in his movies and babies.
Yeah, he loved, well, look at him. He loved you. He loved his family. He loved his wife. He loved his animals. He lived the life, like he said to you, don't feel badly for me. I've lived the life of 100 men. And
yeah,
he had.
That's true. That's the truth.
And,
that's,
you know,
very true.
You have done such lovely tributes to your dad. I know he would be thrilled to know what you have done in the book, in the documentary, and you going out. And his films are amazing.
You know what he told me when I was trying to get this documentary made?
What?
And he says, Bill, what the hell are you doing? Nobody cares about this. He thought I was crazy to be messing around with it.
Isn't that funny? And look what happened. Yeah. These guys just don't realize, you know, and I'm so grateful to TCM for bringing these wonderful films. Oh, my God.
You know, TCM, you know, there's a load of directors that have nobody out there, you know, punching for them.
Yeah, they don't have anyone to champion for
them.
If
somebody doesn't do it, you know, if I didn't do it, you know, who knows? But except that I have TCM as a partner, and so that's terrific.
They are just wonderful.
They play over 40 of my father's films.
And I've watched so many of them, and he was wonderful. And Bill, you are such a darling, and I so enjoyed our talk. I really did.
Well, you're very nice, and I appreciate it, and I'm just happy that you care.
I do care, yeah. And I know my audience does, and they will love to hear you. You are wonderful. And check out the documentary, and definitely check out his book. It's fab. And
hey, I got a YouTube. I got a new YouTube that just came out. I did a show at the Autry Museum in Los Angeles, and I got interviewed on camera.
Cool.
By Rob Word, who's a great historian about the Westerns, and he did a whole thing, and I did talking about Have Gun, Will Travel, and Gunsmoke, and. You know, I did 18 episodes of television Western, so it's all about that. And I think it turned out pretty good.
Good. So I will link that on YouTube. And all you guys have to do is really go on YouTube, William Wellman Jr. But once I find that, I will also link that when I post this.
Yeah, Rob Word, it's his YouTube, so you can... I guess you can find it just with me. I don't, you know, I'm not sure. It just came out, so I don't know. But I'm all of a sudden getting a lot of emails about it, so it must be
great.
Out there somewhere.
No, you're wonderful. I've enjoyed our talk. It's just been a real pleasure. So,
well, thank you so much.
And thank you.
And I hope we meet one of these days.
I hope so. If you're in New York, you know, let me know. I'd love to have you on again. There's so much more we didn't talk about. And once this is done, I will send you the links. And
well, thank you.
Like I said, I'll hook you up with the books and the documentary and all that other stuff. So, Bill,
great.
I've enjoyed
great.
This immensely. Thank you so, so much.
Well, thank you.
You are quite welcome.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
With his pants falling down, or the dance that's a dream of romance, or the scene where the villain is mean, that's entertainment. The lights on the lady in tights, or the bride with the guy on the side, or the ball where she gives him her all, that's entertainment. A fight like you see on the screen, a swain getting slain for the love of a queen, some great Shakespearean scene where a ghost and a prince meet and everyone ends in mincemeat. The gag may be waving the flag that began with the Mr. Cohan hip-hop.